Hello and welcome to episode 19 of Chicago Business Podcast, where we introduce leading executives in the area and learn how they are innovating within their organization. I am your host, Drew Sekula, and today we welcome Nelly Vasquez Roland, co-founder and president of A Safe Haven Foundation, a large award-winning nonprofit based here in Chicago. Hello, Nelly. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Drew. Nice talking to you today. What a nice break in my day to spend some time with you and your audiences. I'm excited.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to meet you and happy to have you on the podcast. So I see you're doing all sorts of amazing things. So thanks for carving time out of your day. Let's go ahead and start, though. And if you could share with us the mission of A Safe Haven Foundation, that's a great place just to kind of level set and then just kind of 30,000 foot view, and then we can take it from there.
Well, Drew, we are celebrating our 26-year anniversary this year of being on the front lines of addressing the homeless and the opiate epidemics. And we are grateful for the last 26 years to have built what's called a social economic development model that really helps provide a one-stop shop and a complete solution for addressing the root causes of poverty and homelessness and connecting people back to jobs and permanent housing. And we do it all within one organization umbrella and our networks here throughout the Chicagoland area. So,
yeah, that's great. That's a great summary of it. I know you guys go real deep with what you do, and I'm excited to get into some of those details because you're making a huge difference to the homeless population. It's clear over many years, but with it being even that much more of a focus, I think, here with over this last year. So I think that's it's great that there's people out there like yourself, and we need more of them. So but with that, before we get too much further, I'd like to start with our beverage of the day. So I know you have something there, and I have matched it with your background. I'm not sure how well we'll see it, but let's give it a try.
Okay, I don't know if you can see it with the screen, everybody, but I am enjoying my daily drink. You know, day drinking is popular, they say, during COVID. My day drink of choice is actually an elixir of sorts, right? So it's water infused with cucumber and orange slices, as well as lime and anything I can find in the refrigerator. Sometimes I have raspberries and blueberries and strawberries, but today my drink is made up of cucumbers and oranges. So that's what I'm having today. Hopefully you're joining me and your guests can do the same.
Exactly. Well, I have one right here that without the camera issues, so I matched you, and it's excellent. Yeah, we get something similar to this over at Standard Market over in Westmont. Sometimes they have in their grill there, and like to enjoy it as well. So it's a great afternoon beverage here. So
that's right. We gotta stay hydrated, you know. And a lot of the drink, I like to think that my drink also has a lot of vitamins in it, vitamin C, and helps build up our resistance and defenses against COVID too. So multi-purpose
drink. There you go. So maybe we could take a step back and start with kind of your origin story and talk about where you grew up and give us a little flavor for who you are.
Okay, well, I hail from the Chicago's Little Village community. My family is immigrated from Mexico in the early 60s. And I'm really proud of that because, you know, I think that, you know, within our family, there's always been a tremendous amount of courage to be pioneers and exploring new frontiers to obviously make this a better world for our family. And I feel like got a lot of what I learned and applied to the work that we do with helping the homeless from that. And also my husband, who's my co-founder, I've got to give him a shout out. His family emigrated from Ireland. So he too is a first generation American, and his family came and his father signed up, you know, for the Korean War. So my husband too is a military veteran. So, you know, we come from a mission driven background. So as we talk, I hope that it helps some people understand, you know, why the work that we do and helping the next guy is personal to us, but also important to us to make sure that the world that we came to here in America is always considering, you know, those people that are coming here, just as the Statue of Liberty, you know, said, you know, bring us your poor, you know, and we will be here. And I believe that we have a model here that continues to live up to that legacy and that dream.
Yeah, that's great. That's great that you guys have embraced that and made such a big big difference as well. What did you know that you always wanted to work with nonprofits, or at what point did you see that was the direction you wanted to head?
You know, in retrospect, I do believe that the seed was planted in my life throughout. You know, as I mentioned, just, you know, watching my father and, you know, how he came with nothing and built something that was able to support, you know, a family of seven children, and how there was always room in our household for anybody who needed a place to stay. You know, there was always room for them, even though we lived in a 3-bedroom apartment in Little Village with 1 bathroom. You know, for some reason, my, you know, family always felt that if someone needed help, we should, you know, extend a hand if we can. But then also when I was in high school, you know, I went to a high school downtown Chicago that actually was right next door to a homeless shelter. And every day I would walk past these people that were homeless, and I would always wonder why they would choose to be homeless, you know. And it wasn't until I got to talking to them that I understood that for many of them, it was a catalytic event that happened in their life that was catastrophic, or from some of them that was, you know, it was chronic because they suffered from underlying issues such as substance abuse or mental health issues. And, you know, knowing it, issues like that we experience in our own family firsthand, you know, made us realize that, you know, there was a broken system out there that was letting too many people with tremendous potential fall through the cracks. And, you know, someone had to come up with an idea that really helped get people to a place that was designed to take the time to understand why they're in crisis. And, you know, and finally, you know, after my husband and I graduated from college, you know, we were fortunate enough to have built our careers in the world of finance. And for me, as being someone that was a woman and a woman of color, that, you know, was something that was pretty pioneering at the time, you know, to have someone like me in the field, I was able to really build a very lucrative career that allowed us both to take some of our own resources and start investing in a way to help people by buying buildings and communities that were very distressed, investing in them, turning them into the crown jewel of the community, and then just saying, hey, let's let some people that need a place to stay here for a while, and we'll hire some people to help them. And that one thing led to another, and the more people we helped, the more we wanted to help expand our ability to do that. And before you knew it, we took a huge leap of faith, left our business careers, our finance after 13 years, and decided to go all in and do this full time. So we've never looked back. You know, I just say, you know, we just took our experience in investments, in assets, you know, that were, you know, stocks and bonds, and decided to take our experience and apply it to investing in people, you know. And we've realized huge returns on our investment and have witnessed people that have, many of us would have considered, you know, people that were beyond hope, you know, today living the American dream and owning their own business and going through law degrees and supporting their families. And, you know, now after 26 years, I can honestly say I've witnessed the next generation come up of children that are benefiting from their parents having gotten help at a time that they needed it, that are now, you know, obviously living, you know, the dream themselves. So you can break the cycle of poverty. You can break the cycle of generational poverty. And we've got thousands of testimonials to prove that. In fact, you know, Drew, I don't know if you knew this, but I'm coming out with a couple of books. One is called An Elegant Solution. That really is a memoir about our story, you know, throughout the last 26 years, that describes, you know, a little bit about our why and also some of the challenges that we faced along the way, trying to build something to help the most stigmatized population in the world. As you can imagine, the challenges we must have faced and trying to help people coming out of prison and people that were considered, junkies, you know, like, why would you want to help those people was really a thought that people would say to us, you know, and then how, you know, we're at a pivotal moment now. And then also what for me is even more exciting too, is the fact that I've got a book called Healing, which is really going to be an anthology of at least 10 stories of people that have gone on and are living the dream, that have come from very, very difficult circumstances. Some of them were homeless for decades. I am not lying. I mean, I even would have said, no way. But they are now proof positive that it's never too late. And their own stories said in their own voice is just so inspiring to see that again. Some of them own their own businesses. Some of them are, you know, again, pursuing upper, higher education and are working in corporate America and, you know, and getting promoted, you know. So, and it all started out with someone just saying, hey, you know, let's just see what's going on and let's try to uncover what that is and solve it. And let's open some doors for you back into employment and into permanent housing. And they took it from there and ran.
That's really amazing. So, you guys really take a more holistic approach then. You're not just providing a shelter and a place to go. It's more of a solution than that. So maybe you can tell us, share with us a little bit, some more of those details.
Yeah, well, you know, we knew right away, and having again looked at the systems that were in place, you know, starting like 26 years ago, many of the nonprofits that were run out there were run by people that had social service degrees and, you know, knew, you know, certain aspects of what people needed. So there were people that focused on workforce development or social services or education, you know, our place for people to sleep at night. But we knew that there had to be a mechanism that connected all of those services so that anybody that walks through our door for being in crisis for whatever reason, they would have immediate access to a team of multidisciplinary professionals that can actually take the time to assess why they're in crisis, and no two people are alike. So we know that some people have been in this situation because they were born into it, you know, and they never had a chance, you know, of breaking out of it because they didn't know how and have never seen it happen before in their own families. So we take the time to find out socially, economically, education-wise, behavioral healthcare-wise, you know, and housing wise, what it is that is happening and what it is that they're going to need special attention for. And we create a service plan for each individual that while they're at a safe haven, they're going to be introduced to the right services in the right sequential order so that their time is going to be allocated appropriately where they're in a position to actually benefit from those services. So for example, you can't say, you know, you're unemployed and you're clearly, you know, becoming homeless or poverty stricken. Let me get you into a job training program. Well, if we don't know why that person is in crisis in the first place, then maybe it's due to a substance abuse issue or a criminal background that, you know, has these barriers to employment. We need to deal with that first. So that way, all the money that we get in terms of private donations or public dollars are being allocated very very much just in time, so that we're actually improving our chances to achieving a sustainable success in every aspect of their lives. So there's a direct correlation with the more services we offer, the longer length of stay, the more likelihood of them achieving sustainable self-sufficiency for a much longer period of time, if not forever. You know, so that is the opportunity that we have, you know, to change behavior. It takes at least 21 days for anyone to change behavior, right? So imagine someone being homeless for 30 years, you know, they might take 6 months before we're able to get them on a path to, you know, become self-sufficient, if not longer. So again, it's beautiful that we have a model that's free to anyone that comes to us, but thanks to our sponsors and our supporters. And we're able to connect them and their children. So many people don't realize that there's a lot of heads of households out there today that are families with children that need help, and the children need help just as much as the parents do. You know, so we're able to provide services for the adults for everything that they need, but also including parenting skills, but also for children that may have faced some type of trauma, you know, throughout their lives, as, you know, their parents have experienced trauma, and that way the whole family heals together. So it's a very powerful, very robust model. We're grateful to have been recognized on so many platforms, on so many levels, by so many stakeholders, whether it's business, academia, public policy, public health leaders, for our model that's really been, you know, a pioneer, you know, and really helping people understand that we need an infrastructure and a vertically integrated ecosystem that gives people a place to get help, but also a soft landing back in a society. So for example, we deal directly with the criminal justice system. And since, you know, over 20 years ago, we started partnering with them and saying, hey, we're noticing that a lot of people that come to a safe haven have done time. And when they come out of prison, they end up with barriers to employment and barriers to housing. And they end up in our program for, you know, after having been homeless and for months, right? So how do we connect with the corrections Department of Corrections so that they're actually discharging them directly to a safe haven, you know, and serving the balance of their time with us instead of having them sit in prison, right? So that's been something that we started, you know, back in 1999, and has been a very successful model for helping people, again, reduce the number of people in prison, reduce the cost. And a very important thing that people don't realize is that on average, half the people that come out of prison go back to prison within 3 years. So we're able to break that cycle of recidivism. And again, why it's good for all of us is because it's reducing crime, it's reducing violence, it's reducing addiction in our communities, and it's also improving lives and improving the ability for families to support their children, because believe it or not, 70% of the women in prison, for example, are mothers, right? So if they're in prison, their children are either in the DCFS system or they're living with a family member, such as a grandparent, and it's a burden on that family and that system as well. So we're healing a lot of things at the same time, when we think about helping that head of household, you know, get access to services. And by the way, we improve our workforce and we expand our tech space, which is a good thing too.
Yeah, no, it's great across the board. It's interesting when you think about innovation. Nonprofits aren't usually the place that people think about first, but you guys have really done some great things, and it's been and have been recognized as such. So a Safe Haven Foundation won a 2020 Chicago Innovation Award for best response to COVID-19. Can you fill us in on the backstory with that?
Well, I think, you know, the crisis of the pandemic has really been the ultimate stress test, you know, to all of us in terms of our systems, right? So being in the business of helping people in crisis, I think gave us, you know, a huge advantage of understanding, you know, in a crisis situation, how to respond. And we knew, believe it or not, we started following the pandemic and the COVID novel, you know, coronavirus in January. And on January 31st, we actually sent out an email to our leadership team and said, let's start strengthening our infection control policies. So in March, when the governor started announcing the closure of businesses and schools, we knew that as more information was coming out, that the homeless were going to be the most likely to not be able to shelter in place. They have nowhere to go, right? They were going to be the most likely to get the disease because they had the most underlying conditions. They also were the most likely to spread it, because if they don't have a place to stay, they're going to be in our buses, they're going to be in our, you know, public spaces, and are going to be a lot more likely to spread it. And they're going to be most likely to get really sick and most likely to die from it. So we knew that we needed to step up and do something about that. And thankfully, we were in a position where we had a tenant that had just moved out of our 140,000 square foot facility. We had 7,000 square feet to work with, and we were able to partner and reach out to the Rush University Healthcare System and suggest the idea of opening up a medical respite for the homeless and for people that were living in doubled up situations and couldn't isolate if they were to get COVID-19. So this was going to be and is specifically for people that have been diagnosed COVID positive, but they're asymptomatic or they're mildly symptomatic. So the idea and the plan was in place. We pitched the Chicago Department of Public Health to say, look, some of that CARES Act money can help us fund a COVID positive place that's going to help address so many of the public health issues that are being faced by those that are homeless, right? So thankfully they agreed. So we are really proud to say that we started these conversations when there were only 25 people in the state of Illinois that were COVID positive and only 1,000 in the country. So, you know, we really jumped on this early. We were able to open up the COVID positive space literally 3 weeks later, which was record time. You know, when you've ever dealt with government, you know, that's like lightning speed. So I give them a lot of credit for their ability to support this right away. And then since we've opened it, Drew, I'm so proud to say that we've had over 420 people at least come through the program. And so far, we're very grateful to say that we have had zero deaths. And that is thanks to the leadership of the people that are in that space, the nursing staff, the comfort care workers. So that space is not just for dealing with the health condition of people that are in our COVID medical respite, but they're also behavioral health care professionals too. So they're getting in-person health, in-person behavioral, and telehealth and telebehavioral health care services. Three healthy, nutritious meals a day. So their health and their behavioral health is being monitored constantly. And because our model is designed to really help people address the root causes of why they're in poverty or why they're homeless, we also have the ability to introduce case managers that are taking the time while they're there to find out what else is happening. You know, are you dealing with behavioral health care issues, education issues, job training issues? Do you have a job? Do you have a job to go back to? Do you need to be connected to job training programs or to work, you know, to business employers or to permanent housing? Many people are facing evictions right now, right? So the bills are piling up. They're scared. And we're helping them alleviate some of that stress while they're there too. So it is truly turning into a one-stop shop that I hope helps inform the delivery system for the future, because I have forever and a day said we need to understand that people in crisis, especially for behavioral health care issues such as the opiate epidemic, which is also going up tremendously right now, as people go to the emergency rooms or their doctors and they're diagnosed with behavioral health care issues such as dealing with the opiate addiction issues or alcoholism or things like that, and also are suffering from other social determinants of health, that we should have the healthcare institution refer people to a community-based behavioral healthcare treatment model, which is what we do at Safe Haven, so that we're helping them physically make sure that their health and their maintaining, you know, all the things that they're supposed to be doing, such as taking medications for diabetes and things like that, you know, and monitoring that, making sure they're in compliance, but also helping them address everything else that's going on in their lives. So now we're really helping that individual heal on every level that may be contributing to their ability to earn a livelihood and to support their families.
Yeah, that's great. I think those partnerships are key. And obviously what you're doing there with Rush and teaming with the city, it's been great. Not surprising that Cranes recognized you as a 2020 healthcare hero as a result of those efforts. So it seems like everywhere I looked, I saw more praises for the work that you guys have done. So that's great.
Thank you.
Recognized.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but I'm going to tell you the Chicago Innovation Award gave us an award too for the best response to COVID-19. And that was a really competitive process that people, I guess, had a judge on. And so we're just blessed. You know, we just do what comes natural. I'm not going to lie. It was a high risk, high stakes proposition to my board to pitch the idea of opening up a COVID positive space. Right. They're like, Nellie, you talk about this in March. They're like, you are exposing the organization to a major health risk, major financial risk. And if things go awry, I mean, what's going to happen to our reputation? And, you know, to me, there was no choice but to respond this way because it truly aligned with our mission. And if we didn't help the homeless, who would, right? So it's been a blessing that people have noticed that, but we never imagined that in a million years that would happen. So thank you.
Right. Those partnerships then seems like they'd be really key. And we'll talk a little bit in a little bit about funding, but how well connected are you with the local, it really would be the hospital facilities probably, I guess, as well as the correctional facilities we've already talked about some, to just transition there? Because I think, as you mentioned, it's really, you know, the circumstances are much improved the earlier, I think, that your people are identified, the better, right? So,
Well, you know, people tell me all the time, you know, even though we've been around for 26 years, we're still considered a best kept secret. And to me, that's, you know, shame on me because, right, we have to be better advocates and a bigger voice, especially at a time like this, Drew, because we are already seeing, I always tell people, you know, you really want to know what's going on with the homeless, you know, and the challenges that they're facing. You know, ask us, we're the leading indicator. You know, right now what we're already seeing and is being predicted by experts around the country is that the pandemic is going to cause a tsunami of homeless. Now, people think if you could just, you know, conjure up the image of what it looked like from the pictures that we see from the Great Depression and people lined up for bread lines, right? And if you think about the idea of, you know, what happened with the mortgage crisis in 2008 as homes and, you know, were being foreclosed on and boarded up and what that meant in terms of creating, you know, more homelessness. I believe that we haven't seen anything yet because compared to what is happening right now with the pandemic, we already knew pre-COVID that 40% of the population was living one paycheck away from being homeless. And with so many small businesses and employers, you know, barely holding on by a thread right now and so many people falling behind on rent, we're already hearing from people as our phones and our emails are getting inundated by people that are trying to plan their next step. You know, so as things come to a reckoning moment, you know, where are they going to go? And unfortunately, the city right now, due to the pandemic, has been forced to decompress a lot of the homeless shelters, and they've reduced the number of beds available for the homeless by 10% at a time when we're expecting to see a surge of about 40% more homeless, you know, as part of the aftermath. So, you know, although our relationships have been there, they can absolutely be stronger. The more public outcry we have for support, for planning strategically towards winning strategies to preventing homelessness and ending homelessness, the better off we'll be. And, you know, this isn't something that has to be baked in as a new initiative. We need to look at what is the landscape right now, what are the best practices that are happening, and how do we scale them? Because we don't have the time to really start anything from scratch, and we've got to go with what's working. And if nothing else, as an investment professional, this is how I've always guided my investments. You know, I've always looked at, okay, you know, where are the winners, you know, and how do we invest in that so that we improve our chances of getting the best return on our investment? And that's what we need to look at in terms of our precious public resources and even our philanthropic dollars. You know, where can we invest in a way that's going to make the biggest, you know, return on our investment, and at the same time, maybe even help replace the broken systems that we all complain about with models that engage public and private partners in a way that leverages resources and talent and treasure in a way that's going to produce real sustainable results for the people that need it the most.
Yeah, that's great. Where do you get the majority of your funding?
The majority of our funding, there's no majority. We're grateful that we have about a third of our funding comes from government. A third of our funding comes from the private sector, from private donations and corporations. And then also we have about a third of our funding. We haven't even talked about this. We knew that the people we were serving faced many barriers to employment. So we actually invested in social enterprises. So we have a landscaping company. We have a staffing business that works with employers that are looking to hire people ready to go back to work. And then we also have a catering business. So our own social enterprises generate about a third of our revenue as well. So it is important that, again, no one entity should be dependent on any one funding stream. And we're funded by city, state, federal, and county funding streams publicly. And the private sector is what I believe allows for a huge opportunity for us to expand our ability to do more. And being the best kept secret has not helped us in that way. So hopefully by being on your show, people will learn more about the work that we're doing and will find us as they're giving back this year during this giving season. And hopefully, you know, homeless ranks high on their plans to give back and make a difference this year.
Yeah, that sounds great. Happy to help any way that we can. For people who want to learn more, where's the best place?
Okay, the best place is to go to our website. It's asafehaven.org. We have some very, very exciting ways to give back this year in a way that truly is going to make a lasting impact. Again, not just on the issue of helping one homeless person, but how do we galvanize and unite our efforts in a way that's going to systematically help people now and for the next generation in a way that's going to be sustainable.
Well, that's great. You guys are making a great difference, and hopefully we can drum up some additional support for you and continue to contribute to your mission. So thank you for all that you do, and thanks for joining.
Thank you, Drew.
Okay, have a great day. Okay, take care.